But first, I'd like to welcome on Phil Wolgan. He is the Managing Director of the Center for American Progress's Immigration Policy Team, because I want to talk about Trump's supposed compromise to end the shutdown that he made over the weekend. And while we essentially know his only concession seems to be giving temporary protection to Dreamers, which, by the way, is something he took away in the first place, so all he's doing and all he's proposing is restoring something he got rid of on his own, but there also appears to be a lot of poison pills in this Senate bill that was just proposed a little while ago that has a lot to do with Trump's compromise. And as Phil Wolgan has been tweeting about over the past few hours, by the way, give him a follow at P. Wolgan, that's P-W-O-L-G-I-N, over on Twitter, because Phil, you did a tremendous timeline and thread on some of these poison pills that are in this bill that Senate Republicans have proposed to try to end the shutdown. And first up, Phil, welcome to the program. Glad you could join us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I was following your Twitter thread, and I have to admit, I was already annoyed enough by this so-called compromise of Trump essentially just restoring something he took away in the first place. But then I go ahead and look at your Twitter thread, and there are all sorts of poison pills in this bill that Senate Republicans have proposed to try to end the shutdown. And one of the ones that jumped out at me is this complete ban on asylum for people that are at the border. Can you tell us what exactly is that? And is this even legal to do?
Yeah, I mean, let me just say first, you know, I think as much as I every time I think I'm not going to be surprised by the Trump administration, I am once again. I mean, this is one of those scenarios in which even my low expectations for this sort of compromise or whatever we'd like to call it legislation, I mean, this is far, far worse than expected, right? There's no reasonable observer could look at this and say, yeah, this looks like a compromise. This looks like an actual good faith effort. So the provision you just flagged, you know, part of this, what the Trump administration is trying to say is, look, we're going to create a way for kids in particular from countries, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, right, not have to leave their own country. They can apply for refugee status from home or, you know, Costa Rica, Belize, somewhere in the area. But the provision they've tucked in says, at the same time, we are going to make it so any kid from these countries who comes to the border, you can't get asylum. Absolutely no asylum whatsoever at the border. This doesn't seem legal. It also doesn't seem to make much sense. If you look at how the bill is drafted, and I can't imagine this was intentional, but then again, maybe it's just really nefarious, but the ban on applying for asylum starts immediately after this bill would be passed, and yet, even under the bill's term, it would be 8 full months before even that paltry way that you could apply in the area would be stood up. So for at least 8 months, there's zero way for any child from Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala to apply, and even after that, very little way to apply.
So essentially, if I'm reading this right, you can't apply for asylum if you're at the border. So what exactly do you do if you're in a country ravaged by war or ravaged by gangs? Are you just supposed to apply while you're in your home country and then just hope for the best, hope that something happens over the next few months, which obviously doesn't happen because usually this process takes a whole lot longer than that?
Oh, yeah. And on top of that, they're actually capping the number of people they will accept under the program each year. They'll take in 50,000 applications, but they're only going to process 15,000 of them a year. So we're talking about, like you say, children fleeing really unspeakable violence in untenable situations. And the Trump administration is saying, we are going to make it nearly impossible for you to actually get asylum. Or if so, if you want to go through the process, yeah, just wait in that terribly violent situation. I mean, this is, you know, radically different than, say, what the Obama administration did when they created a similar program that would process people in country, but said, look, if you're in imminent danger, we will evacuate you to another country while we process your application. And they never said, you know, we're just going to stop people from applying for asylum at all. I mean, that just goes against both domestic law and international obligations. It really just makes no sense.
So I got to ask you about this as well, because I was reading through this before the show, and I just can't believe this, but this bill also includes basically what's, lack of a better term, a slush fund of $500 for any applicant from DACA to be used for any enforcement action, including building the wall or separating families, etc. As you tweeted about this, why is this in the bill, and what exactly is this? So essentially, it seems to me, for every person who applies for DACA, they send $500 towards a border wall or any other type of border security?
Yeah. I mean, this is just baffling. And this is something, as far as I can tell, without precedent. So there's always been a fee for any single visa, right? You cover the fees to the government to process your application. It's the same if you apply for DACA or a green card. What they're saying is on top of that, you have to give the government $500 that will be specifically earmarked for immigration enforcement. It's everyone under DACA, 700,000 or so. It's everyone under the TPS provisions of the bill. I mean, we're talking about $500 to $600 million that the Trump administration can really do whatever they want with, as far as I can tell, very little restrictions or oversight. And that's a pretty scary thing, given what we've seen from the administration.
Yeah, another thing you were tweeting about is how this program they're talking about, I believe it's TPS, caps the number of kids who can apply to only 50,000 per year, but as you say, it only allows DHS to accept 15,000 people. So even as you say, by the end of the first year, which is the waiting time for kids facing unspeakable violence, it'll be many years. How is this workable, as you say? Is it even?
Yeah, I mean, I think the point is that it's not, and I think this is where we come back to this not actually being a serious proposal, right? You can't see away. If your goal is, look, we don't want people to make the dangerous journey, we want to stop so many people from coming to the border, there's no way that this plan will actually do that. And I think if you take things like restrictions on the numbers, if you take things like trying to stop people from coming to the border, turning themselves in, you know, applying for asylum, all you're doing is incentivizing people to come in not through legal channels. I mean, so many people that are coming to the border now are literally turning themselves into Border Patrol agents to say, look, I want to apply for asylum. I want to go through the process. And, you know, the incentives under legislation like this is to tell people, you can't do that. You should, you know, do this process that doesn't work, or basically sneak in. And, you know, that's clearly something that nobody thinks is a good idea.
Again, we're speaking with Phil Wolgen. He is the Managing Director for the Center for American Progress's Immigration Policy Team, and I really encourage you to follow him on Twitter, P-W-O-L-G-I-N, for his great thread on some of these poison pills that were put in this Republican bill, which has to do with Donald Trump's compromise, or supposed compromise, that he made over the weekend. We were going through some of the provisions just a few minutes ago. Are there any others you'd like to highlight of these poison pills that have been getting stuck in this bill that the Senate GOP is proposing?
So I think one that I find particularly ironic is that there is a new ground of ineligibility, which is to say that a new reason why DACA recipients would not be able to get this temporary status under the bill if they've ever done anything like sexual harassment, and it's on them to prove that that's true. One wonders if the president would be able to, you know, pass such things. I think that's a pretty interesting test. And I think there's a whole bunch of other restrictions out there, frankly, that are set up to make sure that even if this were to pass, even if we're saying that everyone who has DACA should be able to get a temporary status, the number of people who might actually be able to ultimately get that status is probably far, far lower than even people who have DACA today. So, you know, it is nowhere near a fig leaf. It's restrictive, it makes no sense, and it's just punitive.
So switching gears, Noah, I want to actually get into the border wall debate itself and whether border walls actually work, because so often when I hear this debate between people that are on the left side of the issue and the right side of the issue, I hear it framed in terms of moral issues, where Democrats say and people who lean to the left say, well, it's not moral to build a wall, which I completely agree with, while people on the right, of course, make that opposite argument, saying that we need to make our country safe. We can't have open borders. But I think it kind of misses the larger issue with this whole Donald Trump border wall. And the question is, do border walls actually work? And this is a question for you, Phil. And what unforeseen problems do we have with actually having a giant border wall across the entire southern border?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. So I think there are probably three things I would flag, and I can go into all of them. I mean, one is just the environmental impacts. We're talking about a significant number of endangered species on the wall. My colleagues on our energy and environment team talk about soil erosion, other things that just don't do very well when you're actually talking about building a physical wall. I think another thing, the second thing that really just does not get talked about enough, is the fact that, look, two-thirds of the border is either privately held land or it's owned by one of the Native American tribes or the states. I mean, this is not land the federal government owns, and that means the only way they can build the wall on it is if the federal government seizes that land through eminent domain. So we're talking about, you know, potentially hundreds, if not more, of people actually losing the land, losing their, you know, subsistence, losing their farms, and I think that'll be a really big fight. There's even the Catholic Diocese of Brownsville that has a chapel that would fall right in the path of the planned wall, and that chapel would have to come down. So, you know, we're talking about significant issues. And then I think there's just the efficacy question, which is that, look, some of the most secure borders in history, if we're talking about the Berlin Wall to Israel's border wall, India's border wall with Bangladesh, I mean, these are still walls that have seen significant numbers of people evade them. Even our own border wall, one article I read recently said there were three tunnels found in January alone under the U.S.-Mexico border. A wall just isn't the answer.
Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to this eminent domain question, I should say, because I was doing some research on this, too. And as you said, the vast majority, especially in the state of Texas, is actually privately owned. And I remember back when the Bush administration tried to do this, property owners weren't exactly treated well. They weren't getting full price for their land, even when they were being eminent domained. And I'm sure that would probably be the same policy under a Donald Trump administration.
I think that's exactly right, and I think there's a, you know, it's a really good reason why the one Republican member of Congress who happens to from the border region, Will Hurd, he's got a significant amount of that Texas border wall. I mean, he talks over and over again about why we don't need a wall, why a wall is not the answer, and, you know, he would know better than anyone. It's his constituents who are going to be affected.
Yeah, thanks. So this is Phil Wolgen. He is the Managing Director of Immigration Policy at the Center for American Progress, talking about the border wall and some of the problems with the wall, and then also the poison pills that were put in this Republican Senate bill that has to do sort of with Donald Trump's supposed compromise. Hey, Phil, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day to go through and talk about what's in this bill and also talk about the border wall as well. Really appreciate it.